Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Yuma Prison Crash Out by J.A. Johnstone and William W. Johnstone. Narrated by A.T. Chandler. Chapter 1. For about 10 seconds, perhaps as many as 15, Harry Fallon considered letting the inmates have at the fat weasel. After all this time, Fallon wondered if he would have enjoyed watching those butchers rip apart Captain Clyde Daggett. Maybe even those rioting prisoners would let Fallon join them. Because when the sweating, flushed captain of the guards ran up to him, Fallon could feel the lashes that Daggett had laid on his bare back, and the knots on Fallon's head seemed to throb again from the leather-wrapped stick Captain Daggett carried when making his rounds. The brute often used that club to remind the convicts at the Illinois State Penitentiary, better known as Joliet, the city where it had been built back in 1858, that he, all 5'5" and 200 pounds of him, was boss in the washhouse, the cell blocks, the yard, the chapel, the cemetery, the work details, and here in the prison laundry.
"Hide me, Fallon," Daggett cried.
Fallon watched the tears rolling down the fat man's cheeks, mingling with the beads of sweat that quickly broke into rivers that flooded down the crevices in the guard's face.
"For God's sake, Fallon, hide me!"
That was asking a lot. Outside, Fallon heard the screams, the ringing of the bells, the reports of shotgun blasts, and the incessant rat-tat-tat from the Gatling guns on the north and west walls. Outside, men were being butchered, and Fallon didn't know who was doing the killing. Most likely the guards. When Fallon heard about the planned eruption of violence, nothing remained secret among the hardened inmates at Joliet. He even briefly considered joining the boys. But the boys wouldn't trust him, Fallon knew, and he understood something else. Those prisoners who dared to revolt, to make a desperate but doomed attempt at freedom, would not stand a chance. They would be cut down, slaughtered. Likely the inmates knew that, too. They just didn't give a damn anymore.
"Fallon!"
the fat figure begged. Reason returned to Fallon's mind. Reason and humanity, which he thought he had lost after 10 years in this inhumane place. "In here," Fallon heard himself saying, words that should have surprised him, but nothing shocked him anymore. Fallon nodded at the cart of laundry in front of him. Daggett blanched.
"Are you crazy?" he said.
"Then to hell with you," Fallon barked. Why was he even helping the brute? By hiding Daggett, Fallon would be putting his own life in jeopardy. Outside, the Gatling gun silenced. A roar came from several prisoners, like a rebel yell from charging Confederate soldiers during the late War of the Rebellion. The bark of the Gatling gun resumed, and the victorious yells turned into shrieks of bullet-riddled, dying men. Footsteps sounded outside, and just before the door smashed open, Captain Daggett dived into the cart, pushing it against Fallon's body. The inmate, in his 10th year of a 15-year sentence, stopped it with his body. He had always been lithe, but strong and sturdy. 10 years in Joliet had hardened his muscles even more. Quickly, he tossed several black and white striped shirts and a pair of relatively clean pants over the pathetic fat pig. The guard had dropped his grip on the billy club, and Fallon picked that up and deftly slipped it inside the waistband of his coarse prisoner's pants near the small of his back. He pulled his striped shirt up and let it fall, covering the weapon. Almost immediately, 6 men barged into the laundry. The last one slammed the door.
"Where's Daggett?" the first man roared.
Fallon recognized him immediately. Joe Martin, 6'2", sentenced to 30 years for myriad charges, maybe another 15 to go before he could be released. He was shirtless, bleeding from both nostrils, missing his right ear and 2 fingers on his left hand. The ear had been severed in a fight with Hume something another. Fallon couldn't remember the man's last name. That brawl had happened before Fallon arrived at the Illinois pen. The way Fallon had most often been told the story went something like this. A few days after the fight, Hume somehow got a makeshift knife stuck between his ribs, and Martin had gotten 10 more years added to his original sentence. The fingers Martin had chopped off himself, scuttlebutt had it, to get out of a work detail. The busted nose was the only recent injury, and Fallon could imagine what had become of the guard who had landed that punch. "Where is he?" Martin demanded. Fallon nodded at the door that led to the yard. "Come on," Martin shouted, and moved toward the heavy door that led to the exercise yard. Fallon watched the horde run, and he tried to stop from sweating, even though the laundry became a furnace this time of year, and no one would notice sweat. Hell, by this point, everyone in Joliet, guards, the warden, and the prisoners, were drenched with sweat. So most likely were the people on the other side of the prison's stone walls. The newcomers to the laundry wore desperation on their faces. No pistols, no firearms that Fallon could see. And if these men had managed to get a shotgun or a revolver, they would not be hiding those at this point in their futile game. Two held sticks like the one Fallon had procured. The others had the makeshift knives forged in the factory, smuggled in through the prison walls, carved out of wood or stolen from the kitchen, or paid with bribes to trustees and corrupt prison guards. Fallon even had a handmade knife sheathed in his left brogan. He doubted if any prisoner in Joliet did not have a knife or something similar. In a place like this, if you weren't armed, or if the inmates didn't think you carried a weapon, your life wasn't worth spit.
"Wait, Joe!"
Fallon frowned at the grinning man, the prisoner bringing up the rear of Martin's gang. Bald-headed, rail-thin, pale, pockmarked Dan Watrous, better known among prisoners, guards, the warden, and even the chaplain, as the Deacon. An Old Testament fire-and-brimstone preacher awaiting a date with a hangman in roughly 3 weeks. Martin stopped, angrily spun around, and cursed the Deacon, who never took his eyes off Fallon.
"It's Fallon," the Deacon said.
"So what? I won't dag it.
Fallon's a law dog, remember?"
"Yeah, I've heard that bandied about. But he ain't never turned a key on me, Deacon," Martin said, "and never turned agin me in the years he's been here."
"Till now," the Deacon said.
The Gatling gun fell silent again, but not the shotguns, and not the screams. But that was outside, or in the main cell block. Those places Fallon had no control over, and he felt his control in the laundry slipping from his grasp. The Deacon smiled, spread his arms, and said in a mocking voice,
"We are in the Garden of Gethsemane, Deputy Marshal Hank Fallon, and we have come for you."
Fallon heard the muffled gasp of Daggett beneath the laundry. No one else appeared to have caught it, and Fallon said,
"You want to avenge your brother, Watrous? Come ahead."
Blood turned the pale man's face beet red.
"Don't you mention Jimmy to me, law dog."
Of all the prisoners in Joliet to try to escape through the laundry room to go chasing after the cowardly brute Daggett, the Deacon had to be one of them. Fallon had never met Dan Watrous until the bald-headed killer came to Joliet to be housed briefly for no more than 6 months before he was to be returned to Effingham, Illinois, to hang for rape and murder. The Deacon had never set foot in Judge Isaac Parker's courtroom in Fort Smith, Arkansas, 13 years earlier to testify to the character of his brother, Jimmy Watrous, or even offer an alibi, or beg Judge Parker for mercy. Parker, on the other hand, was not a man known to be prone to show mercy to a man charged with running poisonous whiskey in the Creek Nation and for killing a deputy United States Marshal while resisting arrest. Fallon, however, had not killed Jimmy Watrous. He had merely put a .44-40 caliber Winchester bullet in the kid's thigh, testified the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, as a witness to the murder of Federal Deputy J.T. Oakes, and Fallon had identified the young Watrous as the killer. Judge Parker had sentenced him. The hangman had pulled the lever on the gallows.
"You got a personal feud with Fallon, that's your business," Martin told the Deacon. All I want is Daggett and to get out of this hell hole.
Then you best hurry, Fallon said. The gunfire outside now echoed with whistles in addition to the screams, curses, and bells. All intensified. Your window's closing.
Come on!
The deacon started his sermon that he would wash his hands after he turned Fallon over to the people being Joe Martin and the other convicts, but no one listened to him. No one but Harry Fallon. Martin resumed his hurried march toward the door. Fallon never took his eyes off the deacon. Feeling the sweat darkening the back and armpits of his shirt, Fallon also felt something that steadied his nerves and almost reassured him that he might live through the next few minutes. The billy club pressing against his buttocks and backbone. Two of the men, the red-headed Irishman who had burned down a saloon in Chicago and the old man who had ridden with the Reno brothers back when he was a fool green kid, slowed, keeping their eyes on Fallon. The deacon touched the edge of the laundry cart, and he even looked down at the freshly laundered clothes. Fallon almost held his breath, but somehow kept his cool and trained his cold brown eyes on the men as they passed. Once he had reached the door, Joe Martin placed his hand on the handle. Two others, the one-eyed Italian from Springfield and the burly brute who had derailed Burlington Route Express in Adams County a year ago, waited by the door, listening to the violence outside. They hesitated, uncertain. Planning a riot, a slaughter, and with luck a prison break was one thing. Living through it was altogether something else. The old man spit on the clothes and moved as fast as his brittle bones could take him. The redhead stopped abruptly, grinning like the simpleton he was, and reached for the shirt the Reno gang member had just spit on.
"Hey, Joe," the kid yelled. "You want a clean shirt?"
Fallon's one chance was that the coward underneath the laundry would keep his wits. In his gut, he knew that would not happen. The shriek beneath the clothes startled the redhead. He dropped the shirt, stepped back as if the cart held slithering serpents ready to strike. Fallon began stepping back as well, away from the inmates. All this while Captain Daggett tried to climb out of the laundry, turning over the cart onto the hard stone floor.
"What the?" Martin stepped away from the door.
"God help me! God help me! God help me!"
Daggett tried to scramble to his feet, but his brogan slipped on the pants of men he had abused, and down he went.
"It's Daggett!"
the old man who had ridden with the Reno brothers shouted, and brought up his blade. There was no time for Fallon to think. Thinking left men dead. Besides, Fallon's silence had just betrayed Joe Martin, and Joe Martin showed about as much mercy as Judge Parker. Fallon's left hand jerked up his shirt from the back. His right gripped the handle of the club, and he stepped forward, bringing the leather-wrapped stick around, slamming it across the deacon's jaw. The man's face contorted, and blood and teeth splattered the overturned cart as down he went. From the corner of his eye, Fallon spotted the petrified captain of the guards crawling over laundry, trying to find his footing. Fallon let the momentum of his swing carry him around. Then he brought the stick up and down, smashing the Irishman's wrist. Bones snapped. The kid screamed. The metal and wood knife dropped onto the side of the cart. The Reno lifer rushed toward him, started his thrust of his pike toward Fallon's ribs. But Fallon proved to be too fast. Where he found that speed he could not fathom, but men could summon up anything when they had no other choice. The club swung, caught the old-timer in his throat, smashing the larynx, and sending the man against the tubs of dirty water. Water sloshed over the edges. The lifer stood there, clutching his throat, sucking for air that would not come. He was dead before he toppled onto Captain Daggett.
"You!"
An angry scream replaced Joe Martin's voice. He and the burly man turned away from the door and rushed toward the mangled and dead inmates, terrified guard, and Harry Fallon. Only the one-eyed Italian kept his wits. This wasn't his fight. One way or the other, he just wanted to get out of Joliet, and serving a life sentence, this was his only chance. He jerked open the door and disappeared outside, leaving the door open.
The Gatling gun spoke its ugly sound. Fallon figured the Italian died quickly, but died trying to escape this repugnant place, and not to kill just to kill before you died. Fallon shifted the nightstick to his left hand. His right grabbed the knife the Irishman had dropped onto the overturned cart. He raised it, meaning to gut the burly man who was running ahead of Joe Martin. Instead, the Irish punk came up. The redhead was full of surprises. He drew a butcher knife from his boot and, gripping the knife with his good hand, lunged toward Fallon. Chapter 2 Fallon reversed course. He ducked underneath the redhead's swing. With his right hand, Fallon slashed with the blade. It was luck, nothing but pure luck, but Fallon took it. The blade somehow caught the Irishman across his throat, and a red-headed punk spun around, falling to his knees, slipping in the lake of blood that came from his gushing jugular. Almost at the same time, Fallon brought the stick up with his left hand. The heavy club caught the charging brute between his legs. The big man's blade came down, slicing into Fallon's back, but the ugly cur had lost his grip on the blade, and now he staggered to his right, right into Joe Martin's path. The leader of the riot crashed into the burly man, caromed into the dying, cutthroat Irishman, and slipped on the blood himself. By then, the deacon had come up, his face masked in agony, blood spilling from his busted jaw. Fallon swung the stick and caught the other side of the killer's face. Down again went the deacon, who was bound for the gallows. Bullets began peppering the wall behind the open door, splintering the shelves of soap and sponges and the wall, followed by the sound of ricochets zinging into stacks of clean clothes and piles of dirty laundry. Martin and the brute were recovering. Captain Daggett had managed to get at least to his knees, keeping his makeshift knife and stick. Fallon moved.
"Get going, Daggett."
Fallon kicked the guard's buttocks. The fat jackass went down, but this time came up quickly. Daggett glanced behind him. Fallon pointed toward the rear of the building.
"That way."
"But the door."
He stared with hope at the open door, the one the Italian had run out to be cut down by one of Joliet's two Gatlings.
"Your pals are shooting without looking," Fallon snapped. "You want to die, go ahead."
The man saw the murderous inmates stirring behind Fallon. He turned.
"Storeroom," Fallon shouted.
Terrified, Daggett ran for his life. Harry Fallon followed right behind him. Once he reached the door, Daggett jerked the handle. The door did not budge.
"It's locked,"
Daggett wailed. He whirled around, desperate. If any color remained in his terrified face, it vanished. Without looking, Fallon pounded the door with the club.
"Open up," he screamed. "Quickly, open the damn door."
He whacked the door harder.
"What?"
Daggett sniffed, not comprehending.
"You're not the first guard to run here," Fallon said.
He slammed the stick against the door again. Then he swore at the futility. And now those cowardly guards refused to open the door, to risk dying themselves, to save Harry Fallon and Captain Daggett. Well, Fallon couldn't blame them for that. Given the same circumstances, he might have done the same thing. No, he would never have done that. Even 10 years in the Illinois State Penitentiary hadn't stolen everything from his soul.
"Oh my God,"
Daggett dropped to his knees, clasped his hands.
"Don't kill me, Joe. Please, please. God have mercy. Don't murder me. Don't kill me. Like..."
Fallon turned around, knife in one hand, baton in the other.
"Like a dog?" Joe Martin laughed. "Like a dog. Ain't that what you always said to me, you miserable swine? Ain't that what you said to every man you ever abused?"
The deacon mumbled something no one could understand, spitting out more blood and bits of teeth and tongue.
"No, you'll die, Cap'n. But first this Judas will die, like the dirty, lying law dog he once was before he became a dog like me and all them others."
Deacon seemed to try to smile, but his busted jaw and mangled mouth refused to cooperate. The brute brought his knife up quickly, slashed. Daggett screamed, wet his breeches, stumbled back against the door to the storeroom, and fell onto the floor. He covered his head with his arms. He shivered. Fallon leaped back, feeling the knife's blade rip into his coarse shirt. The nightstick whooshed across the air, and the big man sucked in his gut as he ducked back himself. Fallon took in a deep breath, faked the lunge with the knife, stepped back, and almost tripped over Daggett's quivering body. Now, Fallon heard nothing except his own ragged breaths and the pounding of his heart against his ribs. The gunfire and terrifying noise outside of the laundry had not ceased. Fallon just couldn't hear that reckoning anymore. What happened outside was of little matter to Fallon. The one thing that mattered was right here, right now, between Fallon, Martin, and the big convict. Fallon slashed out with a nightstick and knife, watching the men dodge, and then he made a dash away from the storeroom and the cowering Daggett toward the tubs of water and the dead man whose throat Fallon had crushed. The killers, ignoring Daggett as Fallon had hoped, though not that hard, came after him. Fallon stopped, went around one of the tubs, and watched the two men charging. He dropped both knife and stick at his feet, grabbed the edge of the table on which the tub sat, and somehow managed to overturn the table and tub. Water splashed onto the floor, and both Martin and the big man slipped on the soapy foam. Down they went. Fallon reached down, picking up his two weapons, and moved to his left. The burly man recovered first, and he still held his knife. Fallon took a chance, shifted his grip on his own blade, and let the weapon sail. It caught the man in his chest, but the blade was too small to make a fatal wound. In fact, the big man did not even seem to notice the knife stuck just beneath his rib cage. He started to stand, but slipped again on the suds and wetness. Cursing as he fell, he landed hard on his chest. He grunted, pushed himself up, and then dropped into the suds. The big man did not move, but Fallon noticed the water beneath the convict turning red. Redder. Redder. Fallon understood what had happened. When the big man fell in the soapy water, he landed hard, and the force pushed that little knife deeper into his chest, puncturing his heart, perhaps, or his lung, or something. Enough to kill the murdering rogue. That left only Joe Martin to deal with. Unless... It struck Fallon, others who had joined the riot remained alive and were heading for the laundry at this very moment. Fallon didn't give that another thought. If it happened, it happened. Right now, the only person Fallon needed to worry about was Joe Martin. Joe Martin, soaking wet, was on his feet. He held a knife and a studded stick, and he stepped up to the man lying face down in the bloody water. He glanced at the dead man, spit into the water, and waded through the wet mess. "I'm going to kill you, law dog," Martin said. The blade shot out. Fallon parried it with his billy club. He let Martin take the offensive, and he backed away, between the buckets and bins, the carts used to haul laundry here and there. Stick against stick, knife slashing this way and the other. Like two fencers in one of those swashbuckling adventure novels set in old France or among pirates in the Caribbean. Fallon had hoped that Martin would give up on this folly, that he might remember that his only chance now was to somehow get out of Joliet, that even if he killed Fallon and Daggett, he would soon be dead himself, gunned down by the guards already angered by the callous murder of many of their own. Martin's blade slashed deep into Fallon's left arm, maybe halfway between elbow and shoulder. Blood stained his tattered, wet sleeve, dribbled over his fingertips. The knife he held became more difficult to grip. He had circled back toward the storeroom where Daggett had gathered himself and huddled against the thick door, still locked, gripping his knees with his hands, trying to pull himself into some invisible ball. The studded stick swung toward Fallon, who ducked, felt it tear a few strands of hair from his head, and slam against the door. Daggett shrieked. Fallon brought the blade up, but Martin dropped his own blade and grabbed a tight hold on Fallon's wrist. The killer's fingers squeezed like a mechanical vise. The studded stick came back toward Fallon's head, but then both men were tripping over the quivering form of Captain Daggett.
They landed hard on the floor, Martin on top of Fallon, but Fallon rolled away from Daggett in the storeroom, taking Martin with him. Fallon stopped, came up, and brought a knee toward the convict's groin. Martin blocked it with his studded stick. The convict swung up his fist, but Fallon ducked beneath it and brought the nightstick down on Martin's throat. Martin died with his larynx crushed, too, and died with hate-filled eyes staring into Fallon's cold brown ones. Realizing that it was over, for now, Fallon dropped back. He was on his knees, straddling the dead man, and now every muscle in his body screamed in agony. The pains in his various wounds multiplied. He could hear again the rat-tat-tat of the Gatling gun, the shouts, the whistles, and all of the inhumanity. Mostly, he could see Joe Martin and the others that Hank Fallon had killed. And he could hear the sniffles of the brutal captain. Shouts came from everywhere, and Fallon slowly understood that it was all over. The ride had ended. Ended badly for many prisoners and who knew how many guards. Yet Fallon was alive. So was Daggett.
"Fallon!" Daggett gasped.
Fallon did not, could not, answer.
"Fallon, you saved my life."
The man was slowly regaining his grip on reason.
"Fallon, listen. I'll do anything you want, anything. I'll do whatever I can to see you get, I don't know, parole, pardon, maybe to a better prison, a reduced sentence. I'll do anything. Anything. Just don't... For God's sake, please, man, don't let anybody know that I showed Yeller. Don't tell them I was a coward. Promise me."
Repulsion, gall, hatred, remorse, exhaustion, sick, miserable, self-loathing, disgust. Fallon felt all of those. Then, because he had spent 10 years in this hellhole, living in a cell infested by rats, he felt the way most men here felt. He felt nothing. Not one damned thing. Nothing at all. Chapter 3.
"Drop the damned gun, you son of a bitch!"
Slowly, Fallon turned toward the open door. He stared down the barrel of the shotgun at one of the guards, the new pockmarked youngster who had started his job just 2 weeks back, held in shaking arms. The kid's uniform was soaked. Fallon didn't know if it came from an enormous amount of sweat or if the warden had called in that pumping engine from the firehouse down the street to turn the hose on the inmates. He knew one thing. He didn't have a gun. Didn't even hold the club or a makeshift knife anymore. So he just stared at the kid as three other guards rushed in.
"No," Captain Daggett rose quickly. "Hold your fire, men. It's all right, we're safe. The inmates here are dead."
Daggett grabbed the stick Fallon had used to kill Joe Martin and banged it on the door to the storeroom.
"It's all right. We're in control. You can open the door and come out now, you damned yellow-backed cowards."
A bitter, mirthless laugh escaped Fallon's lips. He shook his head. He had to give Captain Daggett credit for one thing. The man recovered quickly, and he thought amazingly fast for a man who had barely escaped a brutal death, who had been paralyzed by fear just moments ago. The door to the storeroom did not open. Fallon wondered if the men inside could hear. Cautiously, the new guards, led by the pot-bellied man named Goodman, moved around the wreckage of the laundry. The boy holding the shotgun lowered the weapon and brought up the rear. Their whispers reached Fallon's ears as the men saw the dead prisoners, but the men did not seem shocked. Probably, after all that had happened outside, nothing would surprise these men ever again.
"Captain," Goodman said, "did you kill all of these?"
Another guard finished the sentence.
"Yourself?"
"Yes," Captain Daggett said, but stiffened at the lie. His eyes flashed toward Fallon and the fear returned, but only briefly. He made a quick correction, but not a complete one.
No, no, not all. Fallon here. He helped. He killed this one and that one.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?